welcome to Pop Culture Ninja. I'm Nathan Bell. Joining me, Nathan Bartlebaugh. Nathan, how are you today?
I'm doing well. Hello, everyone.
Nathan and I have been on a quest to bring you good entertainment podcasts, and so this is going to be our first attempt at one. But first, before we kind of dive into our goal and mission, we have our guest with us today, Greg Dutcher from These Go to 11. Greg, we have a couple of announcements. I'm jumping into my These Go to 11 co-host stage.
I love it,
right,
man. It's like the very first episode, dudes, is a crossover. So all we're going to do, dude, is steal like a little bit of time for These Go to 11 on Pop Ninja Culture. It's like we're hijacking it, man.
Yeah. So I'm going to go ahead, turn it over to you. We have five winners from our contest and then a brief announcement from our sponsor. So take it away, Greg.
Yes. First, our sponsor is Mission Aware. And this kind of special hybrid crossover, we're still mentioning Mission Aware. You can go to missionaware.com. Just awesome resources, t-shirts, mugs, beer paraphernalia. That's right, Mission Aware and beer paraphernalia. It's awesome. I love your morning surge with Spurge, which is the Charles Spurgeon coffee mug. It's a favorite of mine. Very, very cool. A lot of great stuff there. They're going to be featuring some of our stuff as well in the coming weeks for These Go to 11. And who knows, maybe Pop Ninja Culture someday, we'll see how that all goes. But anybody that wants to get stuff there, the recommended code now is SUSTAIN11, SUSTAIN11. You hear the SUSTAIN. SUSTAIN11, and that'll get you a nice discount there of 11%. See what we did there at Mission Aware. And then, because we podcasted so much this week, Nathan, but we're so rarely together,
yeah,
we're doing that on Pop Ninja's kickoff, so I'm going to do this really quick. We had five winners of books, two that won a book from Scotty Smith, his excellent book, Everyday Prayers, and I'm going to knock those out right here at the beginning. The first winner is Homie Does Play Dat. I like that. Gave it a five-star review. Subscribe and annoy others to subscribe. Homie Does Play Dat. So whoever you are, homie, send us your email, or I'm sorry, your snail mail, so we can send you the book. You email us at thesegoto11, that's all spelled out, and then the number 15, thesegoto1115@gmail.com. Second winner of the Scotty Smith book is Stauros Surfer. Cool. I'm pretty sure Stauros is the Greek word for the cross. I see what you did there. Wow. What I've been looking for. Five-star review. Thank you. Thank you so much. Moving on. Three more books. I'm going to do this quickly. We have Smiled Often. Gives us a five-star review, man, which is awesome. I'm hooked is what Smiled Often says. You're going to win a copy of Killing Calvinism written by, I don't know, some D-bag guy. But no, he's a good guy, some people say. That's my book.
Some Dutcher?
Yeah, some Dutcher. Greg. Yeah, written by Greg Dutcher, which, as you can imagine, kids in high school, what they did with that one. So that was great. And the next winner, what do I got? Two more to go, guys.
Two more.
Let me pull this up here. The next winner is Abraham Shiner. We got a real name there. Keeping it real, five-star review. Thank you so much. And the final winner of the day, let me pull out my list here and make sure that we've got everything nice and randomized. Final winner of the day is Joel517Wheel, who writes, love this podcast, five-star review. That was not intentional to get all five-star reviews. We do have some lower reviews.
We do.
And we hate those people in a Christ-like way. No, is that wrong? Is that not how you say it?
Should I not say that?
Yeah. I'm not a part of this.
Nathan's like, I'm Nathan Bartlebaugh. The opinions expressed on this weird hybrid crossover are not necessarily those of the host.
Not the Nathan B. you're looking for.
Yes, yes. So those are our five winners. Again, the first two won the Scotty Smith book. The next three won my book on Calvinism. And just email us, and we'll get those out to you ASAP.
Sweet. So we're going to shift gears for a second, although, Greg, I do understand that we over here at Pop Culture Ninja have received a caller. We're going to get to that D-bag in a minute.
Dude, on your first episode.
I know.
It's great to have fans.
Yeah, we'll see if you still feel that way, Nathan, soon, but we'll see.
Nathan, I want to go ahead and I want to give you a few minutes to go ahead and just talk a little bit about the process of transitioning from doing a lot of what you've done so far has been written reviews. I know you said a while back you tried to get a podcast up and going and started and found it just got really chaotic, for lack of a better word. So go ahead and talk about the reasonings for wanting to start up a little bit and what you hope to achieve on the podcast here.
Cool. Yeah, and of course, the last time I was on here was in March, and I made the horrible mistake of making fun of the fact that I was always the bonus episode. Like, when am I going to be legit? And then you guys are like, ha, ha, here you go.
Here you go, man. Your own one.
Into the water. And in the previously, I had attempted to do a podcast. I made that like horrible mistake of sort of you are pulling for people to sort of co-host with you, so you kind of grab your friends and then suddenly you have five people in a room and you're trying to set up a makeshift tent to break the sound. And
yeah.
You know, I mean, it was several years ago, and it was I just had my first child at the time, so the child was screaming in the background, and it was pretty much a horrible mess. We had a few guests and things like that, but it didn't quite work out. The editing process turned out to be about like 5 hours, so but at the same time, I think one of the reasons that I didn't move forward at that time, and one of the reasons it'd be really cool to move beyond, I think, just written reviews, is that my approach to whether it's movies, books, pop culture in general, is I prefer it to be more of like a conversation. And I think that one of the things we've gotten away from on the internet, in addition to just basic, you know, human civility, is that we have gotten away from really having a conversation. Sort of a lot of what's on the internet is, this is my viewpoint, this is sort of the law of how I feel about something, and that's what it is. And I think we've really moved away from being able to have a really interesting conversation about culture and the creativity involved in culture. And I think that goes both ways, from both a secular perspective and even a, you know, we're spawning off of These Go to 11 here. So from that Christian perspective, I think there's an opportunity to have conversations that explore, again, what would be sort of seen, I think, as the interpretive experience of people. Mm-hmm. You know, movies, books, and all these things they fall into. They're not our history. Mm-hmm. They're not our religion. But they are sort of our interpretive experiences of how we see things and how we look at things. And being able to come to that and have a haven or a place where we can all discuss and we all have a common ground. And the last thing I want this to be is something where we sit here and sort of try to make it any one thing, like, okay, let's look at the solely Christian perspective of a specific movie.
Right.
But at the same time, I think there's a lot that we can explore in being who we are.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of fans and you know, geekdom as a thing that's cool now, you know, 20 or 30 years ago, not so much. And yet, still very inclusive, very selected sometimes. And what I'd really like to see is branching out on that and seeing it be that kind of when you walk out of a movie, when you finish reading a really good book, and the first thing you want to do is call somebody and talk about it.
I want
this to be that place.
Yeah.
Very cool.
That's awesome. So you heard it, folks. That's the goal here, is to, from our perspective as believers, not imposing a Christian perspective, but from our perspective as believers, just how we enjoy entertainment out there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're going to explore. And it's not our goal and hope, Nathan, we've talked before, is not to exclude unbelievers from being able to listen in on this and get a good review and to get, you know, strong, solid opinions on the entertainment content that's out there. So awesome. Well, Greg, the Reverend King has called in.
Dude, I'm sorry. On the first Pop Ninja, I mean, you can't even get one out there before he intrudes.
I know. And I got to question this one, though, Greg, because Dave Shive was not in the planning session.
I know, man.
He's got to have drones or something circling around.
There is something going on here that is very suspicious. I'm not sure what, but maybe Pop Ninja can get to the bottom of it.
That's right.
Yeah, he's called you before, Nathan. When you were back on in March, didn't he?
We talked about Matt Damon, I believe.
Yes, I think that's right. Yes. Damon. I think he offered as a corrective, but
he threatened to send me to Uranus.
Yeah, right. That's right. He did, didn't he? Well, he has called in again. I got the voicemails all set up and plugged in here, and again, let me just play Reverend James King.
Friends, it's the Reverend James King. of the James King, King James Bible Believing Teaching Preaching Ministries. Friends, it's been some time since I've called into this cesspool that these fools call a podcast. You see, friends, when you're busy doing the Lord's work, saving souls, organizing book burnings, of course, boycotting Target bathrooms, you just don't always have time to take on every new scheme of the devil. My soul, friends, that old Satan is relentless. But he has a new scheme cooked up today that I simply cannot abide. That's right, these two absolute fools have invited one of their favorite nincompoops, that vile Nathan Basketball, Bumblebee, whatever his name is, friends. Doesn't matter one bit. He's just the latest Bible hater in a long list of rejects they've dragged onto this anti-God cast. You see, today they're celebrating what they call a, quote, spinoff podcast. And it's being, quote, launched today. Let me be clear, friends. What they call a spinoff is really a sin-off. And what's being launched is really being spawned. That's right, friends. In fact, I have it on good authority that this new podcast may very well be the love child of Hillary Rotten Clinton and the devil himself. I'll probably see this new podcast walking around in a little pantsuit soon enough. Well, they're calling it Pop Ninja Culture. See, friends, they cannot hide their nefarious New Age ways. We all know a ninja is a practitioner of satanic magic. And today they're going to talk about this vile new Captain America Avengers movie. That's right. This movie is laden with men wearing women's tights, friends. And notice that these three perverts are just chomping at the bit to talk about what? Grown men in pantyhose. Well, I got some words for the three of you blasphemers. It's more than appropriate that you would call this new podcast Pop Ninja Culture. Because you know what really pops, friends? Oh, I'm not talking about a soda can or a balloon, but a fire. You see, that's why at our annual harvest time bonfire at the King James Bible Tabernacle each fall, I love to ask all the little children to gather around the edge of that fire and look into those flames, and I tell them, now listen closely, children, for the popping sounds. I tell them that's a preview of the sounds that can be heard from the brimstone shores of the lake of fire of people's bones and joints that start popping out of place when they reach maximum heat level as they burn perpetually in hell for all eternity. Oh, friends, you won't believe how eager those little snot-nosed children are to turn their wicked, vile hearts over to the Lord Jesus in faith to avoid such a wretched fate. But there'll be no avoiding it for you. You fools, you enjoy your popping. Now, friends, as I've told you, I've given up on these idiots. But I'm still trusting there may be one righteous soul in the audience today who's willing to hear about a true Avenger. That's right, not these sissified Hollywood actors walking around in their leotards, but a true Avenger, friends. That's right, I'm talking about the best friend of the Lord Jesus on earth right now, Donald Jonathan Trump. That's right. In fact, I just endorsed him in my sermon this past weekend at the Tabernacle. He's a true kingdom warrior, friends. Look at what he wants to do. See, I call him a modern Nehemiah because he wants to build a wall to keep out the godless from bringing in their drugs and their chimichangas into our once godly nation. I call him a modern Moses. Because he wants to pass a righteous law, keeping all those sand-dwelling desert wanderers out of the land of liberty. And friends, may I say it, friends, he's a modern Jesus. See, he wants us all to try find true, abundant life with the overflowing conveniences that come into our laps through the sweat and toil of godless children working in third world factories whose only contribution in this life is making modern gadgets and conveniences that make our lives simpler and more enjoyable. Friends, Donald Jonathan Trump, he's a true Avenger. Now, don't tell me, he's been divorced before. My soul, friends. There's a lot of lying, cheating, fornicating, wife-swapping, cussing, drinking men out there who are good deacons. Good deacons. We can't fault men for having difficulty with the flesh. It flares up at me now and again. Now, I won't give you the details, but every once in a while, yours truly will even indulge in this sort of a way of getting the sin and the vice out of my system. Now, listen, don't you try it. Only godly men can endure such reveling in sin.
But don't watch Ant-Man.
This man, Donald Trump, is a true Avenger. Don't listen to these fools that direct your attention to these pretend Avengers. You just listen into my sermon series for such a time as this. A godly warrior like Donald J. Trump. Friends, you'll hear about that, and of course, at the King James Tabernacle, the sweet love of Jesus. Amen.
Wow, man.
He outdid himself on that one.
I'll tell you what, he was exercised, Mr. Bartleball, at this. What did he say, man? Ninjas, a satanic magician, and
he said a lot of stuff.
He said a lot of stuff in that one, man. Wow.
Well, he's convinced me. Podcast done. Yeah. We're finished. Just pack this up and go home.
I'm just thinking maybe that's an effective technique for child evangelism, to get them around the fire.
That sounds like a really good time. Or a Stephen King novel. Yeah. Are we sure it's not the Reverend Stephen King?
Stephen King.
Yeah. It's like the opening of Children of the Corn he was describing there. Well, I think it's time that we invite him on the show, right?
I think so.
Wow. That would be a bold move.
It's open, Mr. or Reverend King.
Yes, I'd love to hear him interact with you guys, man. Who knows what the future holds?
I know.
Who knows?
He could even use some of that Trump-made technology to call in and talk. Or I'm sorry, sweatshop children-made technology. Call in and talk to us.
Although I did notice that he did mess up the name. I don't know if that was intentional, but it is Pop Culture Ninja, not Pop Ninja Culture.
Oh, well, something tells me Reverend King wasn't too concerned.
Yeah, I think his seltzer water or something had gone bad because he was sat a little drunk. Though I throw out there, you know, we're about to do the comic book superhero episode here.
Yeah.
So is it possible he's somebody's alter ego? Are you sure? You know, I don't know. Like, you don't have any of your constituents falling asleep and waking up, you know, with Reverend King garb.
Oh my goodness, man, that would be incredible. Like, if there is a Clark Kent to his Reverend King,
I know, right?
Wow. Of course, that's not a great example because really, Superman is Superman, right?
Yeah,
and Clark Kent is his fake persona.
According to Kill Bill.
Kill Bill, which is amazing. So you remember that scene at the end of that, Nathan, where Bill finally says he likes Superman?
He does. Well, he talks about how Clark Kent is Superman's critique of humanity.
Us, yes.
Which kind of doesn't make sense because Clark Kent spent his entire childhood growing up under the Kents, which would make him.
That's a good point.
That was the hole in his logic. He grew up as a human being. So
that's true.
He was, you know, the Kents and his values are who he is, which we can talk about when we get to Batman versus Superman.
Yes. And since we're on there, I'll ask you this. This came up recently. You know how people often in theological circles say, when did Jesus know that, you know, was he 3 years old and cognizant of his messiahship? Did it in his humanness come to him later? And, you know, we're not going to get into that today. Mm-hmm. But did Superman know that he was Superman? Is that addressed in the comics? You guys are better on that than I am. Like, when he's a little kid, does he know he's different?
Well, the idea of Superman as a kid was developed later than the series. Like, his backstory was
kind of filled in later. Yeah. Okay.
He's had several different interpretations and stories that deal with his childhood. Yeah. And a lot of them, of course, are that the Kents know who he is right up front.
Right.
I believe the most, when you talk about the Zack Snyder Man of Steel, and correct me if I'm wrong, I believe it was Man of Steel, that showed him having issues even when he was a small young child. Yeah. For instance, a lot of Superman's abilities would be the sort of thing you couldn't turn off. Like, he freaks out when he realizes he can see through people's skin as a young child.
It
seems to be that if you had Superman's abilities, you as a young child where you can't control or rein them in, that you would know pretty quickly something was
different.
Yeah, I just have to say, weirdest scene in that to me is when Kid Clark saves the bus, you know, bus the school kids. And then later, Kevin Costner as his dad is like kind of scolding him for outing himself. And then he says, well, Dad, like, should I let him drown? Do you remember what he said to that?
Yeah.
He said, maybe.
Right.
What did he just say that? Yeah, you let those, you know, 40 kids on the school bus just die an agonizing death to protect your identity. I thought that was an interesting scene.
But what you've hit on to, for me, is the kind of crux of the problem with that movie and then even the sequel, because he does that. I guess we can talk spoilers about Man of Steel.
Yeah.
He does that very thing later when he actually lets Pa Kent die in the tornado. He makes the decision based on what he's told him to let him go you know, he clearly could have run out and saved him, but by exposing himself. So there's a point where it's not just something that Pa Kent says that is part of what he thinks, but it's something that Superman himself actually embraces, which is that's where you really get into the issue of how far are we moving away from who the character really is.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Interesting.
Well, we're going to dive deeper into that. But first, Nathan, you wanted to go ahead and make an announcement about Comic Book Day. So I'm going to let you go ahead and take that over.
Yeah, we are here today. It is the 6th of May. And actually, I think this podcast will be going up tonight. Yep. So one of the things that I just wanted to mention tomorrow is actually going to be Free Comic Book Day. And I believe that's a nationwide thing. You can actually go to www.freecomicbookday.com. There's no spaces in there. And what you'll get when you get there is going to be a page that discusses what this is. And this is really something that has several different participating comic stores and chains that are involved in this. And they work with publishers who have created essentially what are kind of like teaser issues for things. And this goes from children's comics to the sort of more mainstream comics. There are several different ones that are going to be on tap tomorrow. When you go in, they'll have them all sitting there in a specific sort of display. You can come in. A lot of these comic stores are also doing really cool like giveaways and promotions. And lots of times they'll have stuff there for the kids, people dressed up like Spider-Man, Batman. You can bring the kids in. They can get free comics. Again, they also have comics that are child-appropriate. If you're a parent, I just always recommend looking at what your child's picking up and stuff like that. But they can come in and pick up like 4 or 5. The website will give you more information about it. It also has a list of the comics that will be available tomorrow. So you can even do a little bit of research or look at them ahead of time. It also has the listing of comic shops that are involved in this. One of them is KC's Comics, which wasn't very far from here in Falston, right up the road.
Okay, sure.
So they're going to be involved. There's going to be several down in Baltimore and whatnot that are involved as well. And we're going to put that on, we're going to get that out there, probably put it on the Facebook page, which we'll talk about in a little bit. And in addition to that, again, they've got a lot of different things. They're going to have a Dark Horse is going to have a Serenity, Hellboy, and Aliens comic that's going to have sort of a teaser for some of the stuff they're doing. They're going to have specific stories written by Mike Mignola, who did that, and the guy who works on the Serenity comics right now. They're going to have the reprints of the Phantom. Do you guys remember the Phantom? Jim Aparo, who wrote a lot of those classic stories, are going to have a reprint of some of that stuff. And Archie, Sonic the Hedgehog. There's a comic that's actually really directed towards young girls. It's DC Superhero Girls, so it's taking all the characters that we're familiar with, Wonder Woman and things like that, and kind of condensing them into a younger girls' version of stories. It's a little more appropriate to them. And there's something called Junior Braves of the Apocalypse, which is described as the young adult version of The Walking Dead. So keep a lookout for that. So you can see all that stuff tomorrow. If you are listening to this podcast and it is the 6th or the 7th, you can go out to your probably most of your local comic shops will be involved in this. It's going to be a good time. I'm going to take the kids tomorrow and we'll try to get some video of that. Should be interesting. And enjoy. Again, you go to that website, it'll tell you everything you need to know, including where, what's available. And most of the comic shops also have what events they're involved in. So check it out.
Good deal. Yeah, really excited about that. What we want to do right now is just, since you brought it up, Nathan, we want to talk about some of the social media and the ways that we are not only going to be engaging with you here on Pop Culture Ninja, but we're actually, Nathan has been a wealth of information and ways that we're going to be able to engage on These Go to 11 as well. And so we're going to be taking advantage of some of those things on These Go to 11. So Nathan, go ahead and bring up some of those ways that people will be able to interact with us in the near future.
Yeah, so they're going to be the some of the obvious ways, probably some of the same venues that you're using right now with These Go to 11. We're going to be on Twitter. I have a Twitter account. Nathan has a Twitter account. We'll put all that information up. Do we have show notes here, guys?
Show notes?
You know, like on the like something where we
kind
can, a person can access. Yep. Yeah, a write-up where people can access. Yep. And so if you don't get the Twitter feed mentioned here, it'll be there that you can pull it up and check it out. So look for that when you get the podcast. We'll have information there about the Twitter accounts. We are also going to start using two websites that are similar in ways that are related to specific mediums. One of them you may be familiar with now, which is Goodreads. That's going to be goodreads.com. And Goodreads is a place that you can sign up, and it is essentially like a sort of haven for people who love books. It's books all over the place. Publishers are involved there. People have groups set up. They make lists. If you are trying to keep track of how many books you've read, when you go into Goodreads, you'll automatically pop up and ask you, do you want to take the reader challenge? How many books can you read in this year?
Sure.
So if I say I'm going to read 70 books, I can start making my list and sort of way to keep track and tally what I'm reading. You rate books and on a 5-star scale, and Goodreads will also recommend books to you. You can there's a real community going on there, which we really want to tap into and start conversations there as well. So goodreads.com, we're going to start building our own groups there and lists and things like that. So when we talk about lists, when we talk about sort of top tens and things like that, we're going to make sure that all that information, anything related to books, is over there. And we're looking forward to that conversation. Conversely, we are also going to have accounts on letterboxd.com. Mm-hmm. And Letterboxd is actually Letterboxd. There's no E in there. And that's going to be letterboxd.com. Letterboxd.com is a website very similar to Goodreads, but for movies.
Yeah.
So you could go into movies, you can rate movies, you can friend people. So it has that element of Facebook, but it's all related to movies. You can create lists there, and you can also write reviews. And these reviews pop up. There are also several critics that are actually on that site. So when you write a review or you rate a movie, it pops up for the whole community to see. So you can actually have some sort of presence there as well. So I'd recommend anyone who's interested in books and movies, go to those sites. They're great sites either way. And we'll also provide you the information so you can friend us, add us, and become a part of the Pop Culture Ninja group on Letterboxd and Goodreads.
Awesome, man. Cool. Already supremely more organized than These Go to 11 has been. I love it.
Well, let's be fair. I mean, the host of These Go to 11 has had a year experience.
That's true. That's true. So what we're going to do, dude, is fleece everything here at Pop Culture Ninja.
That's right.
Use it on our site and then say they took it from us.
There you go. That's what we do, right?
Yeah, we're going to do that in a loving way, in a way that prioritizes you guys to serve you. I just want to say that. So good.
The other thing that we're going to be doing and featuring here on Pop Culture Ninja is we want to have a segment on the beginning of every episode, little known movies or maybe movies that you think you've never heard of, or, you know, just something. It's going to be a unique feature that's going to feature either a movie or a beer or a book or maybe a restaurant. Today's feature, because we're talking about predominantly comic books and that comic book scene, is a free movie on Hulu called Boy Wonder. And Nathan, I'm going to let you go ahead and set up a little bit of the background and story on that. And then you and I actually saw that one, so we'll talk a little bit about that. Greg did not see that one, so he's going to enjoy our summary.
I'm eager, man, because I want to see it.
So, yeah, the movie is called Boy Wonder. You can find it on Hulu. It's for free. So even if you don't have a Hulu subscription, if you go online and bring up Hulu, you can basically pull up the movie and watch it. And one of the reasons I wanted to bring this to your attention here is that it's a film that is sort of a different take on the superhero concept. And we've seen so much superhero material recently. It's easy sometimes to get sort of superhero fatigue, particularly with the big budget movies. And if you've ever thought, hey, I'd like to see something like this done in maybe a more character, not character-driven way, but in a way where the character is really essential and the action scenes are completely sort of secondary. Because of the nature of what Marvel and DC are on the big screen, it's really hard not to, you know, what we want to see is Captain America and Iron Man duking it out.
Right.
In a smaller movie, you can sort of explore more character-driven elements. So this movie is Boy Wonder. It came out in 2010, which was only a few years after Iron Man, and when really all the focus was shifting to comic book movies. And in that time period, we did start to get a lot of movies that were not comic movies, but movies about superheroes or about the concept of a superhero. If you remember several years ago, much before the comic boom happened in movies, we had Unbreakable, which was the M. Night Shyamalan movie where Bruce Willis sort of finds he's super powered. And that movie wasn't a comic book movie, but it was a movie about the potential of superpowers.
Yes.
Boy Wonder is sort of the opposite of that, and it is essentially, what if we made a realistic take on the idea of being Batman. That's we say that the Dark Knight is a more realistic version of Batman, but it's really the more psychologically realistic version. He still lives in a world that is 100% sort of fantasy in some ways, in the way it operates and its superpowered villains. What if you had a young man who has experienced a trauma in his life, and this it's probably not much of a giveaway to say his mother is killed right up front, and the police, who sort of take pity on him, his dad has sort of fallen into an alcoholic slump, they allow him to come in and actually do research, to kind of research and find out who his mom's killer was. And it sort of it keeps going over the years. They eventually think one day he's going to just kind of get up and leave and he'll be fine. And he never really does. He keeps doing this research. What he's doing in the meantime is also practicing ways in which he can go out and start basically killing fools, you know,
right.
People who are criminals,
yeah.
And the kind of seedy underbelly. And until he finds the guy he's looking for, he's going to just basically go out and pick fights.
Right.
And he's a small, scrawny guy. So yeah. He has to come up with a few equalizers.
Right.
And this movie follows through. It is also not 100% realistic, but it exists in a world that feels very real. He is beaten quite excessively sometimes.
Oh.
And that's where I would say that's sort of the setup. It's really good, I think, for you to just go and discover what the movie is.
Yeah.
It's on an extremely low budget. The actor, Caleb Stainmeyer, he really hasn't been in anything else, I think, since this movie.
No, he hasn't.
But if you ever watched Lost, there was a point in time when you ever seen Lost?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
So you remember John Locke?
Yep.
He played young John Locke, like 16-year-old John Locke.
Right.
So he had a couple of small appearances, but he's really, I thought he was very, very good in this movie. Again, it's a very character-driven movie, and it's probably closer to Death Wish than it is to Batman, really.
Okay.
But there's sort of the DNA of like the year one Batman is in there.
Interesting.
Yeah. And what I liked about it is that component that you were talking about where it explores the reality of what's going on. So he enters into this world of being a vigilante, not coming out unscathed by it. Mm. It has a deep and profound impact on him. Going into this and doing this. So, definitely a great movie. Check it out. So moving right in, we wanted to set up and establish, two movies we're talking about today. We, you know, make no bones about it. Batman vs. Superman, Captain America: Civil War.
Yeah, baby.
We want to section this off though, because we understand that there are some of you who really, you want to listen to and get, just some good reviews about movies without the spoilers. And so the initial part of the conversation that we're going to have is going to be a conversation that does not involve spoilers in either movie, just a good, you know, outright review and rating on it. And then we will tell you when you can go ahead and turn off for the spoiler alerts coming up.
I love it, dude, because we are we're recording this the day of the official release right, of Captain America: Civil War. And you guys saw it a few days ago, to my jealousy. I saw it last night. And so you're going to have to remind me. Great thing, dude. You can always edit if I screw up
we can
spoiler.
Do that.
How was the turnout, Greg?
You know what? It was I saw the 8 o'clock show last night, and it was full but not standing room only. I mean, it wasn't sold out. But I saw, and I don't know if you guys did, I saw the non-3D one.
Oh, okay.
So
jealous. I'm jealous now.
Yes,
because I've kind of steered my boys to not see the 3D, and they don't seem to mind too much. Mm-hmm.
Then you have enough money for popcorn.
Well, exactly. I mean, the cost itself, wow. But no, it was nice and full. I mean, we got there at about 10 of 7.
Mm-hmm.
We were able to sit in pretty good seats in the upper section,
nice.
You know, not the neck crane or strain. And we got there 10 of 7. The movie was at 8. By the time the movie started, I mean, it was nice and full. There might have been single spot here, single spot there. Mm-hmm. But it was great.
Yeah. Yeah. And we went to the pre-screening of it, Nathan, and it was packed out, I would say.
Yeah, it was pretty full. Yeah. It was definitely. And they usually are, again, it's pre-screening.
Right.
They advertise on different venues so you can win free tickets. And who knows? One day, maybe we'll be one of those venues.
That would be awesome.
But the... We saw it in 3D, and I will say this, typically I do not really enjoy the 3D. A movie I saw recently I really enjoyed, and Nathan saw it with me, was The Jungle Book.
Yes.
But that 3D, I kept kind of seeing double. You know, when you wear glasses, it makes it a little more difficult.
Yeah, right.
Just sometimes the 3D is completely distracting.
Yeah.
I will say they used it very well in Civil War. They definitely had – we were just at the right height where that the visuals really popped, and a lot of the it speaks well to a movie when it's been framed in such a way that the 3D isn't distracting.
Yeah.
So I think if you're making a movie with the intention, it helps.
Yeah. And I will say this, going back to Batman versus Superman, I did not see that in 3D. Did you end up seeing that in
3D? I would have had a seizure if I saw that in
3D. Yeah.
No, they did not screen it in 3D either.
Okay. Interesting.
And yeah, someone said that. It's like, you would just have, like, your eyes would be sore for days.
Yeah, and wow. You did not see it, Greg, in 3D?
No, I didn't. I saw it just regular standard
picture.
It was good.
Yeah. So let's talk about Batman versus Superman. Let's just go right around the table here. Just right off the bat, liked it or not. Greg?
Minority Report. I loved it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'll just say real quick, having seen Captain America Civil War, I love it less. I don't want to get ahead of myself.
Sure.
But I went in opening night,
mm-hmm.
same thing or whatever, the night before the Thursday night premiere, seeing that at that time it was, you know this better than I would, Nathan, but it was maybe 28% was the conglomerate review on Rotten Tomatoes. So I tried to put that out of my mind. The guy I saw with, I'm going to give a shout out to my buddy Mark Bradley, mm-hmm. who was there, said, dude. He likes to say, dude. He said, Sharknado, dude, got like 84%. All right? So,
ironically. Right, let's keep it in perspective.
That's right. So he said, so don't worry about those sucky reviews, man. But I really enjoyed it, and mm-hmm. I'm going to defend that. But so I'll say that.
Nathan?
Yeah, not so much. Yeah. I was very disappointed in this movie quite a bit. I probably do fall within what would be more the I think their general groups of people who love it are probably going to be saying about the same things. People who didn't like it might be saying some of the similar things. For me, though, it doesn't have much to do with being a Marvel fan or DC fan.
Right.
I'm a fan of both. If I'm honest, the characters I really like connect with and enjoyed and remember my earliest comic readings were Batman and Superman.
Yeah.
So part of that, though, is when you don't see something done in a way that honors what you're familiar with, I mean, it can be disappointing.
Yeah,
but
sure.
For me, it really goes back to, as a movie, I just don't think this works. There are great things in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
There are moments I would hold up and say, this was really cool. There were moments where I started to get that kind of, when you move beyond being a critic and you fall back into the fan sensibility, that's kind of what you want. You know, in a movie like that, you want to be there with your popcorn, and you know what? Maybe my rational mind will kick in later. I just want to enjoy this as the kid who read the Batman comic when he was 10 and had chicken pox and couldn't do anything else.
Right.
And there are moments, but I don't think they come together. I would argue this is barely a movie. It felt like I was watching a 2.5-hour synopsis of an entire season of television that they just sort of mashed together and were like, we're going to give you 2 hours of... It would be if someone took The Flash and broke it down into a 2.5-hour summary of that entire season. I felt like that's kind of what I was watching.
Uh-huh.
So.
I can see that.
Yeah, and I would say I probably fall somewhere in between the two of you. I wouldn't say that I disliked it. I enjoyed it, and there were very specific things that I liked about it. First of all, I'll just say off the bat, I preferred Ben Affleck as Batman than I did Christian Bale. So I'll throw that right out there on the onset.
I agree.
I thought he did a fantastic job bringing that character to life. Now, some of the other things that went on in there, not so much, but I really enjoyed what he did there. But I will say that I wanted so much more from this that I couldn't say that I fully enjoyed it because there were too many things lacking, in my opinion, from the movie. And I wanted to see more. I wanted more to come from it. You know, Greg, you and I talked about this. When Man of Steel came out, I was ripping it from the beginning.
You
from
were.
The very
man.
First trailer.
Yeah, you didn't. Yeah.
Then the last trailer they did before the movie came out, I softened and I was like, you know what? I think I might actually enjoy this. This is what I'm looking for. This is what I want to see in the movie. And then I went to see the movie and I was just like, no, they ruined it. They managed to ruin it. They had it. It was theirs. And they, you know, they had me. Like, they had me in the story. And then they lost it. And I didn't quite feel like that in this one.
Yeah.
So I will say that it wasn't a matter of them having me and then losing me. I think it was a roller coaster where it's like, oh, I really like this and I can get behind this. And then it was kind of like, it's kind of like Man of Steel again. And then it was kind of like, oh, you know, wait, this is great. And then it was kind of like, No, it's disappointing like I thought it would be, you know. So I went through more of a roller coaster ride with the movie, and kind of, I think, leveled out on it. So
interesting. Well, hey, can I assert my defense just quickly?
Well, is this the point? I think this is the point we'll say. The movie's been out for quite a bit.
Yep. Yeah.
Looks like people have stopped going to see it.
It does.
Yeah. But so if you haven't and you're still interested, this would be probably the point to sort of check out of the Batman versus Superman discussion.
Yeah, probably for about, you know, five to 10 minutes.
Sure.
Depends on how much we have to correct. Right. But,
and I might be at it in a while.
Yeah, because I don't think there's any way we can really discuss either what works or what doesn't work without really getting into, for me, some of the fundamental issues with the movie are going to spoil a great deal.
I agree.
I think that's true.
So, so here's the time where you can go ahead and skip ahead, you know, 5 or 10 minutes. At the 5 minute mark, I'll give a warning, whether to keep skipping or whether to stay there. So
sounds good, man.
All right.
Sounds good.
Greg?
Oh, and can I say one more thing real quick? It might be good because there are things that we do like here. And I think, when it becomes a back and forth, you know, we don't want to make it seem too negative, because I probably will seem like I'm more negative on this movie than I really am. Yeah. Maybe we can go around and actually just start that discussion about what we all liked, first. So we'll handle it like that.
Yeah. So Greg, go ahead. Start.
Yeah. I mean, that's my main point. I liked a lot about it. And because it was in the back of my mind that it was poorly reviewed, that may have helped, mm-hmm. because as much as you try not to have your expectations shaped by, you know, early critic response, it is for me. I look at Flixster just about every day when there's a movie I'm interested in and what's coming up, and I can't help but notice the percentage in terms of the Rotten Tomatoes aggregate. But I knew it was reviewed poorly, and so I kind of sat back and, okay, here's what I thought. It's interesting you mentioned Man of Steel, Nathan, because there were moments in Man of Steel, I mean, I appreciated the special effects, the larger-than-life story, but it was just, I was bored. Mm-hmm. There were just moments where I was just bored. And in this one, I know it's just a totally subjective thing, I was never bored, ever. I mean, there was not a moment in the film for me, personally, that I felt like, man, this is dragging. I would agree that, and I'm getting a little, it was choppy, because I have heard that critique a lot, and I think that kind of ties into what you were saying, Nathan, about the kind of condensing down a whole superhero series into 2 hours. But even though there were parts that were choppy, I thought, okay, it could have been a smoother transition from this scene to the next, but I found the scenes entertaining. I loved the way they teased the little preview of Cyborg and Aquaman and Flash. Mm-hmm. I just liked it. I mean, I know there are probably 101 ways to do it. Sort of the little computer file that Batman gets to look at and gets.
It's real helpful
teaser.
That Lex went ahead and put their logos on there for him. Like, the Flash will like this.
Yes.
It looks better than that hobo Iron Man suit he's wearing.
Yes. That's true. I just I liked it. I liked the little teaser. I'm going into what I didn't like, but again, wasn't bored. I'm totally with Nathan. Ben Affleck so far, I mean, I know he's gotten ripped for that video where he's crying.
Right,
it looks like he's crying and stuff, you know, when he's sitting there with Henry Cavill. But I thought he was great. Mm-hmm. I really liked Jeremy Irons' Alfred.
Yes.
As much as Kane, I go back and forth because Kane is just great. I mean, mm-hmm. I love Michael Kane, he's an iconic actor. Mm-hmm. But Irons can hold his own too.
He does a lot, like very little in this movie. I mean, even if you really like him in the portrayal, I think everyone would probably be in agreement. There's too little of Alfred in this movie.
Yes, I would agree. I would have liked, you know what? I will say this, kind of mixed. I would have liked a little more Alfred and a little less Amy Adams. That's me personally. I would have liked she got a lot more screen time than I thought.
Yeah.
And I would have liked a little more Alfred.
She had more screen time than Wonder Woman, which, considering part of the Trinity, so to speak, of the DC superheroes.
And, dude, since you said it, I'll say that was the other Wonder Woman. Rocked to me. I mean, it truly left you wanting just to, sounds bad to say, see her more. You guys know what I mean.
Yeah.
you know what I mean. Just to see her in action sequences more.
As long as you see her more, not see more of her.
Exactly. Yes.
Well, she has that really, one of my favorite scenes in the movie is towards the end. And I guess we're in full spoiler now.
Yep.
They're fighting sort of the big bad villain at the end, Doomsday. Yeah. And she's got her sword and shield out at this point.
Yeah.
She's rolled up in there. And, you know, by the way, may I point out that Wonder Woman is the only hero in this movie who comes back, gets on the plane, and comes back of her own volition. She doesn't need to have a 15-minute slugfest and then the mention of her mommy's name in order to get on board. Yes. She's already there. She, you know, she's rolled up. She's right there. And he Doomsday hits her or something, and she rolls across the ground, smashes into a car. And when she leaps back up, Gal Gadot has this sort of sneer, sort of smile, like I'm into this. Right. You know, like she jumps back up, and she's ready to fight, and she's back into it. And I thought that was cool. That was a nice tease. I think maybe the problem was they were holding so much back for her origin story that she almost just comes off like an action figure. Like literally like, you know, the pull string version of her character probably says as much as she did in this movie.
Yeah, that's a good point. But I agree. So it's a nuance, but not a contradictory but, if that makes any sense. I love how, I mean, truly they captured a lot with just that early turn of the 20th century picture. It looked like a World War One context.
That was very cool.
Of Wonder Woman. And I mean, just that, I had instant intrigue. Like, man, I want that story to unfold.
Why is Captain Kirk in the background, right?
Exactly. You've got Kirk there or Chris Pine.
Right.
You know, so you can kind of tell. And I just thought, oh, man, they gave me just enough that I truly did want more. But I should shut up, dude. I'll keep talking.
Nathan?
Yeah, I guess we're on things I like. I agree about Ben Affleck. It's funny because, of course, he was the thing everybody complained about the minute that he was cast.
I know.
And yet when he was cast, at least for me, at this point, we had already been through Argo.
Right.
We had seen that he's a great director, and he's actually a better actor when he's directing himself. And we already, you know, to me, I was like, this is a good choice. This is a guy who's going to play Batman. You know, he's going to play it as a character. He's going to bring some of himself to it.
Yep.
And I thought he did really well. I have a lot of issues with the way they present Batman in this movie.
Right.
And I actually don't like Batman as a character in this film. But none of those issues, I think, have anything to do with Ben Affleck.
The way he acted it, yeah.
And actually knowing that we're going to see hopefully a sort of Ben Affleck, if not actually directed, but helmed Batman movie where he's pretty much the primary creative force behind it. You bring him and Jeremy Irons in and get that Batman movie. I'm excited to see that.
Yeah,
I'm probably more excited for that than anything else that deals with this Justice League universe. So there's that. I really love the first 5 or 10 minutes of this movie because, like you said, Man of Steel, I was actually bored by both movies. But in Man of Steel, about the halfway mark when it just becomes obliterating buildings and just wholesale carnage, destruction.
Yeah.
And he like levels the whole city and they just don't address it. And I know that's a typical fan reaction to that movie, but it's a legitimate point. You're just watching things crumble. He destroys more buildings in Man of Steel than Godzilla destroyed in his movie. What does that say? And to have that perspective shift where you have Bruce Wayne driving through the streets of Gotham and everything is falling. That's the moment I was like, this movie's going to really be something cool. It's going to be, it's taken some of the criticisms that people have had of Man of Steel and addressed them. That's what I thought. And there was also that awesome shot of when the nuances, like we were talking about the scene where Wonder Woman hits the car and gets up and it's just the facial expression that makes the scene. There's also that nice nuance of the first time you see him do anything Batman-like, it's when he's Bruce Wayne, when he gets out of the car and he's running and the building falls and there's this giant terrifying cloud of debris and he just runs
he ran into it.
He bolts into it and was like, that, you know, that's Batman.
Yeah.
Right.
And so he got all that with the character. I really liked that. Individual scenes of this movie were very cool to look at. One of the things that Marvel has done when they make their movies is they know they're making movies and so they are adapting comic book imagery into what we expect a big blockbuster movie to look like.
Yeah.
One of the things you could say either for or against Zack Snyder is that he sometimes just takes scenes that literally look like a classic comic book painting or a graphic novel, and he brings them to life like you're looking at them.
Yes. Yeah, that's very true.
Yeah, that's good. So I said, you know, already I enjoyed Ben Affleck as Batman. I thought he was good. Obviously agree with Jeremy Irons as Alfred. One of the things that I really liked, and again, full spoiler alert, one of the things that I really liked was the death of Superman angle.
Mm.
I am a big fan of that story arc and that story angle. What I was – and I'll just say this in terms of disappointment because since I'm on it, I wish they had not teased him coming back. To me, I would have rather – like they did with the comic – They killed him. He's dead. And everybody thinks he's dead. And he's not coming back.
Right.
To me, the teaser at the end actually ruined it. And I was very disappointed with that.
Yeah.
But I did like the whole death of Superman. Now, I know, Nathan, we're going to get into a little bit about this because while I like the death of Superman, and I think you and I agree on this, it was unnecessary. It was unnecessary for him fighting Doomsday. And it didn't need to happen. He didn't need to die in this because Wonder Woman, for all intents and purposes, hasn't been knocked down enough that he couldn't have just given her the spear to kill him. Mm-hmm. You know, she seems to have been going, you know, 10 rounds with Doomsday and been fine.
Yes.
But we'll get into that a little bit later. But I did enjoy that aspect and that angle of it. And I did the fight scenes with Batman, I thought were incredible. I liked, especially at the end where he goes to save, Clark's mother.
Yeah. Martha.
Yeah. we're going to get into the complaint section. Oh,
your mom's name's Martha. So is mine. Let's stop killing each other.
I can't even push back on that.
But that fight scene where he goes into the warehouse, I thought was fantastic. One of the reasons why I liked it is I know they took they looked at the Arkham series, which is a video game series, and they actually mirrored the fighting that he does in that game, which I'm a fan of, having played it. So they use that, and I liked it. I thought it was great.
Interesting.
That's an interesting point, and something I want to say before I guess we get into the negative. And not in the Greg, you can still feel free to be positive.
Yeah, no.
But
no.
If you think about all the Batman movies that we've had, really the only if you set aside the like kind of DC cartoon movies that we've had in Batman the Animated Series, where they have a much stronger draw and relationship to each other, you know, Harley Quinn, which is a character that's going to be in Suicide Squad, really was born in the Batman the Animated Series. Right. She didn't originate in comic books. So those have had a very closer relationship. But when you look at movies, if you look at the Tim Burton movies, the Joel Schumacher movies, and even the Nolan movies, they are just really interpretations of an artist's version of Batman, of a director's idea of Batman. Mm-hmm. They're not even – most of them didn't even involve – The Dark Knight brought in actual comic book storylines, but all those other movies never even took a storyline from the comics. They just brought in, you know, the villains were almost a name only. You know, in some cases, the Joker and the Penguin are all versions. The Arkham video games and this movie are probably the only movie, again, if you leave the cartoons aside, the only movie versions of Batman that are really trying to bring the character that's on the page, at least some version of that character, to the screen. So if you can say nothing else about Batman versus Superman, I believe that's what they were trying to do, is to lift the character from the comics and bring him to the screen.
Yeah.
And that, where a lot of my disappointment comes in, is for me, they kind of failed that in a big way, at least when you get to his personality and who he is.
Yeah.
Right.
And just a quick word, we're still talking about Batman versus Superman.
Yeah, probably so, longer than intended.
Yeah.
Right? But
Always do, because I think there's a point where we can discuss. We're probably getting to a point where we're going to discuss more of the character, the foundational things. Mm-hmm. Do you guys want to move in, talk about Civil War from the perspective of the movie and what we thought about it?
Sure.
And then circle back?
Totally.
Yeah, why don't we do that, and then we'll circle back.
Like
it,
man.
Yeah. So, Greg?
I mean, how original is this? I loved it. with, what, less than 24 hours to reflect on it. Mm-hmm. More curious to what you guys think, because you've had all this time. I saw it with my boys. I just got to say, on that personal level, it was so fun to watch that, where they are in their ages right now. And I know every parent will make that choice. I've told you before in other venues, Nathan, I don't let them watch Daredevil on Netflix as much as I love it.
Right. And how old are they, Greg?
It's tricky. They're 13 and 9. Okay. So the 13-year-old could rock and roll and all that stuff. The 9-year-old, because of his proximity to the 13-year-old,
he gets a lot of free rides.
He does. He's like, Ben, the older one, did not have it as good. He's getting Ben's coattails, taking him to a lot of places. So watching them watch it was so much fun. And I think I enjoyed it as much as they did, maybe even more. And you could say more about this, Nathan, but these guys that are behind these Captain America movies, because I loved Winter Soldier. Because it just had such a like the plot's good. It's not just a thin excuse to get a few cool action sequences. So the plot was good. I mean, a few things that stand out to me. Characters, always great. I read an article on Mashable this morning, which I think a lot of people are making this point. I mean, it's kind of like Marvel has done the slow burn, mm-hmm. and the payoff is so good. So to contrast that, of course, with DC, which is playing catch-up, mm-hmm. you know, you've got a lot thrown in to the Batman-Superman film that Marvel, in their version, would have developed slowly. Mm-hmm. I mean, you had individual movies of all the characters leading to the Avengers. And I just loved it. And I know some people say it's like Avengers 2.5. I didn't feel that way. I mean, definitely it's an Avenger movie because there's mm-hmm. so many of them in it. But it still felt like Captain America was at the heart of this, mm-hmm. beginning and end, and all the way through.
And it's a legitimate sequel to Winter Soldier. Like, it follows up those plot threads.
It was great. It was great. There's so much I could say, but I loved it.
Yeah.
And by the way, the joy note, which is what a lot of critics have pointed out too, which was much more absent in Batman Superman, mm-hmm. the comedic timing, just loved it.
Perfect. And we'll talk about that with spoilers and things like that.
So good.
But Nathan?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it too, and which wasn't necessarily a given because I have been kind of hit or miss on some of the Marvel movies. I, of course, loved when Iron Man first showed up, mm-hmm. when we first had the first Iron Man movie. I will say that most of the sequels, with the exception of the Captain America sequel, I haven't really enjoyed them because I felt like they were keeping pace for whatever the next big thing is.
Right.
Iron Man 2 was keeping pace to get to the Avengers.
Right.
Yeah.
I thought that the first Captain America movie was a fun movie. It was a very different kind of movie. It was probably almost more like a throwback to sort of like The Rocketeer, made by the same director, Joe Johnston. It had a lot of that period drama going on. And it was fun. I really enjoyed it for what it was. It was interesting to see these guys. This is the Russo brothers, to come in and make a movie that was a completely different tonally thing than Captain America, the first Avenger, which is a complaint that a lot of people have had about the Marvel movies, is that they all sort of have the same sort of visual template. We haven't really got anything that's all that different. Mm-hmm. To me, the movies I've enjoyed most, when Avengers first came out, it was different enough in the way that Joss Whedon had taken. I think he did the compressed TV season mm-hmm. in Avengers mm-hmm. better than they did with Batman versus Superman. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Guardians of the Galaxy had a very different visual feel, which is why I probably enjoy it more than some of the others. Yeah. So to me, coming in and just wanting to enjoy it as a movie that feels a little bit different, I can remember events and not say, which one of these things did this happen in?
Right.
Captain America, Civil War had a really good balance of those things. It wasn't, to me, it didn't feel like it was just ticking boxes. It started and more or less concluded a story that can be contained in this film. It found a really interesting way to give almost every character, and we are talking, there's probably about 15 to 20.
Yeah.
Maybe not 20. There's at least 15 comic book characters in this movie who need to have their own screen time, who need to either have their stories furthered from stuff like Age of Ultron.
Right.
You're bringing in Ant-Man. You have two, when I say new to this movie, characters mm-hmm. with T'Challa, the Black Panther, who hasn't been on screen before. And when you see him here, you're sort of like, well, why not? You know, he's really cool. I would argue that the way they handled T'Challa in this movie is sort of rebuffed what they did with Wonder Woman in that movie. Uh-huh. Black Panther has not had his own movie yet.
Right.
He has an entire backstory we know nothing about. But they give him an emotional arc in this movie that starts in this movie ends in this movie.
Right.
And you feel like he was a genuine part of it. There wasn't that for Wonder Woman. I think that's the difference.
Point. Yeah.
Really good
point. Let's talk about Spider-Man.
Yes.
Dude, man.
I did read a review that pointed out, you know, is a much younger Spider-Man. He's about 15 years old. He is his Aunt May is there. Aunt May
Aunt Tomei.
Yes, is Marissa Tomei. Someone says she's more like Aunt February. If you really want to get down to it,
dude.
But I thought that they nailed that. Like, this is their third attempt at Spider-Man, but he's almost like his own. He and Ant-Man are almost like fanboys when they get around these seasoned superheroes.
Yes,
and that scene at the airport is just like a pure, like,
So I agree. You know, I think like that, like you said, in the airport, that scene where they're coming around and you have the interactions from both sides, and there's like this this admiration, and it doesn't matter, you know, if they're on one side and they're, you know, they're trying to be all cool and impressive, or they're talking to the other side where, you know, they're supposed to be quote unquote enemies, they're still like, oh my gosh, you know, it's Captain right. America.
It is a little silly. They all line up and sort of walk run right, yeah. towards each other. It seems yeah. to be that if Captain America really needs to get to that plane and get to Bucky, that they're not going to have this giant fight. But the fight itself, I would say, in contrasting to when Batman and Superman actually fight, there is a sense of joy to it, and it isn't super sadistic. There's a kind of fun, joking right, battle was. To yeah. this. In fact, it's even shaken up towards the end, and I guess we are in full spoiler territory yeah, really yeah. here, that at the end of that scene, we've watched people get beaten and smashed and hit for about 20 minutes, yeah. and then Rhodey falls to the ground and suffers a legitimate injury yes. that you're like, you know, that's kind of a bone-crunching moment, but it's effective.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of quipping going on. Mm-hmm. You see Ant-Man becomes Giant-Man, and that's right. one of those moments you never thought you would see, that Marvel's never going to go there. We're yeah. never going to see a talking raccoon. We're never going to see Giant-Man.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Yeah, and like you guys keep saying, you know, well, first of all, I liked it, yeah. you know, obviously. I thought it was great. A lot of people coming out were like, yeah, you know, they're still trying to compare it to Avengers.
Right.
People are still trying to compare all these subsequent movies to Avengers.
Yeah.
To me, that's just unfair.
Meaning the first Avengers?
Yeah, meaning the first one. Yeah, yeah. First of all, that's unfair. I mean, that's an untwinnable event. You know, this is a one-time thing that had never happened before yep. where they intentionally had built up these movies leading to the Avengers movie. Yep. What I thought they did really well was bringing all of these characters together in a movie that I found myself enjoying.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a little premature. I'm actually going to see it again tonight, so I'll see if kind of the intrigue's worn off after the second time, or if yeah. I enjoy it just as much. But I would say that I enjoyed it more than the Avengers.
Yeah.
That there was something about the way that the characters were brought together, the characters were developed, that everything was just placed in there that I loved.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you guys have mentioned that comedic timing is just there. It's on point. One of my favorite moments, since we're in spoilers, when Steve kisses the girl and the two guys yes. are in the car yeah. and they just give him the dude look, you know?
dude.
Yeah.
Well, affirmed.
And right before that, Bucky's like, "You crowd me back. Here.
Right.
Can
right.
you move your seat forward?" That scene, the way it is handled dude. And the way it is cut, shows that the Russo brothers understand how you translate comic books to a movie, because you can imagine yes. what that would look like in a comic book panel.
Yes.
Here's the beautiful sweeping shot of Steve Rogers and the girl under the overpass, and then boom, there's the panel. Can you move the seat
can
back?
You move you
know,
the seat
and this is, you know, Bucky's on the run. We're still not quite sure. Is he really the terrorist they think he is or not?
Right. Yeah.
And they're, you know, it's a serious sort of context, and then boom, there's that scene. And that's the way comic books happen.
Mm-hmm.
Text from my middle school son, Ben, who saw it last night, texted me today, I guess at his lunch break when he's allowed to get his phone. I hope that's when he did it. And just says, you know, it's like a script writing. Winter Soldier, can you move your seat up? Falcon, no. So that's right. my 13-year-old's way of saying, Dad, wasn't that scene awesome and funny?
Yeah.
And yet Marvel just does this thing where they it's to what you were saying earlier, even about sets, Nathan, the bringing in, you know, Winter Soldier, who is just this unbelievably intimidating when he's in full attack mode guy, and Falcon, who's sort of a bad A character, you know, who's tough. You love the guy. He's got this shtick to him. And just something even as simple as, you know, Bucky saying, hey, can you move your seat up? I want more leg room.
And the writing on this thing, and the referencing, like the riot. So it doesn't like Falcon at one point. I was like, wow, that's a... It's out of left field a little bit.
It was, yeah.
One of the things I like to talk about, since we may be kind of coming down on time, and we could probably sit here and talk about this movie like an hour and a half. The thing about this movie and Batman versus Superman is, I think in some ways it's kind of unfortunate, because they're easy to compare, even though they are two very different movies, in the sense that they're all trying to do the same thing.
Right.
And it was really a mouse of three things. They were trying to be a successful sequel. Mm-hmm. They were trying to jumpstart or be a part of a continuing movement of a franchise. And then they were also trying to be the sort of title fight for some characters that we know who are supposed to be on the same side and yet end up fighting each other. I would say the Captain America Civil War handles why those people come to blows much better.
Yeah.
Even though, for me, and you can tell me what you thought, I thought it was a little strange because watching the movie, I think Tony Stark is definitely juxtaposed as sort of the bad guy. And he certainly was in the comic version of the storyline. Yeah. Not so much the bad guy, but the antagonist, the guy that we were rooting for Steve to save his friend. Right. And yet I think from a sort of ideological standpoint, I've got more issues with what Steve Rogers ultimately does in this movie.
Interesting.
Not so much the way that Chris Evans plays him and some of the awesome scenes, like when he's holding, almost like a callback to the Christopher Reeve Superman, when he's holding the helicopter with his arms.
Yeah.
And he's such a honest guy, and he's not a deceptive person, but his, you know, the safest hands are still our own is a line that you can almost imagine being in the villain's mouth, not the hero's mouth. And yet a lot of what Tony Stark says makes sense. There's a few scenes towards the end that I felt that they pushed the confrontation in ways that they didn't need to.
Yeah.
You know, like to get to this fight, we kind of have to play a card that even I would rather not spoil here for what happens. But what did you guys think about that, the way that that conflict was set up? We do finally have a movie where the characters, their opposition is driven by ideals on a certain perspective of an issue that has real world connotations.
Yeah.
Dude, I don't know. It was brilliant to me because I don't know as much about the comic background. You had told me about the Superhero Registration Act, which they couldn't really do in the movies because everybody knows who they are.
Right.
They don't really need to be unmasked.
Yeah, Tony Stark says, I'm Iron Man. Movie.
So
it
sort of changes it.
Hawkeye doesn't go around wearing a mask like he does in the comics.
And they're whatever that country's initiatives were. What do they call it?
The Sokovia Accords.
Yes.
Which was the whole city that fell back down upon itself.
Yeah. Yes. That was a great way to do it. And what I thought was so cool is before the film came out, because of the media marketing campaign and the you know, hey, are you Team Iron Man or Team Captain? Mm-hmm. And, you know, the guys I saw it with last night, you know, my buddy Mark comes in dressed up like Captain America, shouts to the crowded theater, you know, Captain America, who's with me? And there were a couple of people that were shouting, and some people said, sit down, and all this stuff. But
who did you come dressed up as?
I would have as Captain.
Not Black Widow.
Right.
Did you hear that, Mr. King?
That's right. Yes, if I'd come dressed up as Black Widow, many people would have been disappointed. Scarlett Johansson, not the least of those. But it was I loved the tension. There were moments where I actually thought, I can't believe I've been in this, the tension between Tony and Captain from the personal standpoint was at times almost uncomfortable, but really cool. But also, you're right, that ideological, it's like what we do on our podcast, Nathan. Yeah. I could see two guys almost say, hey, as an exercise on the podcast, defend either position and argue against each other. It was, to me, a legitimate conflict that I thought worked. I could see how they would divide over.
And that's a cool thing to have coming out of a comic book movie, to want to discuss something like that. That's maybe been one of my issues with some of the Marvel movies. You can sit here and talk about how great some of the scenes are, how awesome they are. And like, again, that scene at the airport is worth your admission right there. Yeah. You don't even need to really talk about anything else from that perspective. But there are things to discuss here. Is it a great, heavy argument? No, it's not. But it's not a heavy movie, nor does it try to be. And being able to lace in the humor, part of it too, I think Robert Downey Jr. does his best performance as Iron Man in this movie. Some people said they thought he was phoning in.
No,
I didn't think so at all.
Totally agree.
There's a scene where I believe it's Bucky goes to shoot him, and he grabs the gun with his hand, you know, the costume,
Matt,
right. The costume comes out, he grabs the gun, and the look on his face, like, you were just going to shoot me.
Yeah.
It's a very palpable, he looks tired, he looks worn out, he looks haunted.
Yeah.
All of which things he is in this movie.
Yeah.
And he has probably had the best arc in terms of how much we've seen his character develop. We've seen Stark's character developed more fully, I think, than any other character.
No doubt.
I think one of the problems that maybe makes Captain America's position in this movie look a little flimsy is that we don't have, I don't feel, this is my only real complaint with the movie, Bucky Barnes, the Winter Soldier, has not been, to me, hasn't been fully established enough as a character.
Yes.
I can't quite feel, I know I'm supposed to like him more, and I would say that might go all the way back to First Avenger, where we don't ever get that camaraderie between Bucky and Cap that we should. Like, the movie kind of becomes a montage when they go to war.
Yeah.
And he's gone out of the movie before we get that feeling of them being these two brothers in arms.
Good point. Mm.
Yeah, no, and yeah, I would agree with that. I think not having a fuller development of Winter Soldier doesn't allow you to appreciate his struggle as much in this.
Yeah.
But what I think is great is you talked about the character development of Iron Man. What I love about Captain America is he's the same. Yeah. And to me, that's been what's been great. That was what was great about the comics is when everyone else is saying, do this, do that. He's looking, he's saying, I grew up with these values. Yeah. I grew up with what's going on here. And so I can't move on this position.
He's pure.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
I agree.
He's the Superman of the Marvel,
right.
of the Marvel universe.
At this point, he's more Superman than Superman.
Exactly.
Is.
Yeah.
That's
which
a great
leads
point.
To a,
yeah.
a good point. One of the biggest problems, I guess we could even, if we still have a few minutes, dovetail back to Batman versus Superman.
Yeah.
What they did with those characters in an effort, I assume, to be edgy, to add some dark and grit. Mm-hmm. It's almost edgier that they have made Captain America a stalwart, good guy that has not moved on who he is. He's maintained his quote-unquote wholesome image. He is still unwavering in that. It's more difficult in this temperate and climate to do that with that character than it is to make him gritty and have him start killing people. Mm-hmm. And it takes braver people and more skilled people to make Captain America work in the context of this universe than it does to take Batman and turn him into sort of a killer and make Superman this brooding guy who doesn't mind if people are worshiping him like a god.
Yeah.
You're sinking into the water there during the flood, but I'm just going to hover over you,
right,
just hover.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
So I'll throw that out there for you guys who did like Batman versus Superman. When it came down to why I didn't like it, and we haven't talked about a big thing, which was Lex Luthor, which I thought was an abomination of a character.
That was my most... Yeah. Greatest disappointment in the whole movie.
I don't even
believe. And I like Eisenberg.
Eisenberg was working as hard in that movie as Heath Ledger was at his Joker character, but I think he was on a complete wrong wavelength.
I agree.
He was approaching it. He made completely the wrong choice, and it may have been not him alone that made it. No. It seemed to me that they were like, we want to make Lex Luthor like, you know, the Facebook guy. Let's just hire the Facebook guy and put him in the movie. But, you know, the fact that they talked about Bryan Cranston at one point and that we don't, you know.
I got to jump in on that one, Nathan, because that's the one I think we would all most agree with.
Yeah.
I was so excited when I first saw he was going to play Luther. I thought, oh, I like this guy. You know, he's obviously, he's kind of a, almost a trendy actor in some ways right now because he's, you know, I mean, his whole Facebook portrayal was good. But I thought I could see it. And maybe it's just my childhood memory. I expect Luther to be cold, calculated, sinister, not maniacally crazy. And I found that almost frustrating. He was annoying me. You know, just even the scene where he taps Amy Adams on the head for weak little minds seemed cliche.
He feeds the guy the Jolly Rancher. It was just weird stuff that didn't work.
Weird, eccentric, almost. And remember in the banquet early on where he's giving his little speech and he's going a little crazy. I thought, I don't want this Luther.
Right. It cuts down on the intimidation. And the they have this idea that it's going to be that Luther hates God. And that's why.
Yeah.
And that didn't work because it was just ladled on the top. It was just like, you could skim it off and move on. It didn't impact who he was as a character at all.
I agree.
Yeah,
it's weird because I've read some people that say, "Oh, the only good thing about the movie was." I was like, "Are you kidding me?" I you're right. I don't necessarily blame the actor. I'm wondering if is that, and you might know this more, Nathan, is that directing? I mean, I think of it as the director who is the tone setter, who stops the scene because no, wrong tone.
I think everyone can kind of be blamed here. I think one of the problems is Zack Snyder, to me, seems like he's more a director of scenes. He's almost more of an art director. Maybe this is not fair to him, but every movie I've seen of his, he's more of an art director than he is someone who is a storyteller.
I know what you
and
mean.
And I didn't feel like Batman versus Superman told a compelling story because it was all over the map. And I'll ask this too. What did you guys think about the portrayal of Batman versus Superman? We talk about how we enjoyed Captain America coming in and telling us why these characters were at odds. Can you explain to me why Batman versus Superman actually come to blows in this movie? That's its own podcast, I understand.
It was a little more forced. Let me say it, a lot more forced. I think that's a good point. I actually understood, because I thought they developed Affleck's version of Batman better. I understood, you know, it's even the scene they give away in the previews when he's telling Alfred, there's even a 1% chance, you know, that he could burn the whole place down. We have to stop him. I thought, okay. And in light of the seemingly excessive destruction at the end of Man of Steel, which you're right, they picked up on beautifully with Wayne driving through it and his co-worker dying and the fund for the relatives. I thought, I could see it. Superman just seemed like, he kept saying at the Daily Planet, oh, he's a vigilante. I don't like it. And so they made Batman a little meaner, a little edgier, and his being worked up over that didn't work for me. That was my take.
Yeah, and I agree. And I think I could see where they were going, but what we have on the screen now, maybe the 30 minutes that are going to come out in the special edition will answer this, but right now I can't imagine watching 30 more minutes of Batman versus Superman.
I want to watch it still, though. I do.
But with that, there's a lot of problems there. So Batman is grizzled and angry because he's been doing this for 20 years.
Right.
And yet, Clark Kent is still able to walk around and say, hey, let's do a piece on that bat vigilante. And the cops are still shooting at Batman. So they can't decide if this is the year one Batman.
Oh, that's a good point.
This is a new guy on the beat.
Yeah, that's a great
point. And this is a guy that's apparently fought the Joker, who's lost Jason Todd, the other Robin. And all these things have happened to him, but he's still behaving in a lot of ways like a newbie. The cops still shoot at him. He's still the mythic bat of Gotham. Right. They're still running stories like this guy showed up yesterday.
Yeah.
They want that. And that's what makes Batman look kind of psychotic. Not like a guy who's been run down, but a guy... And then this one, if there's a 1% chance, there's a 100% accountability, whatever it is he says. That's not something Batman ever would do. And Batman is primary element outside of the aspect of justice where he won't kill. Mm-hmm. That's not... He's not virtuous in the same way that Captain America is. Right. That's part of his psychology. That's almost a psychological weakness that he refuses to kill. Yeah. I don't say a weakness, but it's a tick. It's an eccentricity. It's not something you should throw away with the character.
Right.
So it's weird to me that he's killing people now, but the Joker's still running around alive somewhere.
Right.
Shouldn't that be the first guy to go
if
you've changed your perspective on things? But the reason I say I don't understand why they fight is... Eisenberg or Luther blows up the Senate meeting or whatever.
Yeah,
and he does that, I guess, to incense Batman, and he sends him these photos that have things written on them. But it's very clear, even the media is reporting that this suicide bomber blew the building up. It wasn't Superman. He didn't do this. Superman is told, I'm going to kill your mother if you don't kill Batman. And he says to Lois, I'm going to go down there and get Bruce's help. That's what he says. Batman may be walking into this to kill Superman, but Superman walks down there, flies down there, to get him to help him, and the first thing he does is start punching him. You know, like, if you're Superman, you wrap a beam around him, you fly up above him, and say, sorry about tearing the doors off the Batmobile. I need your help. By the way, my mom's name's Martha.
Yeah. You know? Martha! Can I say, though, guys, I loved the scene in the Senate, or Congress, wherever that was. The tension, that was one of the big highlights for me. I personally love the, and that's where the Eisenberg character did work with Holly Hunter as the senator. Remember the, I can't remember what was written on the
peach
jar.
Tea.
Yeah,
peach tea.
Yeah,
peach tea. Holly Hunter acting opposite of a jar of urine. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. yes, it was. But the way that, I love scenes like that where they kind of slow-mo zoom in on the jar and you know something big's going to happen, but I didn't expect it maybe to be that big. And the explosion and all that. In other words, there were scenes. That's what I meant. I just enjoyed. I thought, wow, that was cool.
I think that's a fair point. There are scenes that you enjoy. I even enjoy something we haven't even talked about that is probably one of the most problematic things about this movie is stuffing everything in that ties into another movie.
Yeah.
How about that dream sequence that Batman has in the middle of the movie? When I was watching this, and I already knew that they had hired all these different actors to play The Flash and all these characters, there's a scene where he has a dream. It's implied to be a dream. Batman is in this, it's like Mad Max Batman.
Yeah.
He's got the leather trench coat on.
Yes.
There's all this crazy stuff going on. There are soldiers that have Superman patches and they are fealty to him, and he's sort of dark Superman. And then there's this big, the Omega symbol that is Darkseid, which is a character that they don't even really mention but hint at. All of this happens, and it gets crazy, and it's implied that Batman has let, we assume, Lois Lane die.
Right.
He says, you let her die. I guess it could be Martha, given what happens next. But, we don't really know who it is, but he says, you let her die. And he wakes up, and then this portal opens up, and a guy that looks like he's wearing hobo Iron Man armor jumps out of it, yells a bunch of stuff you can't hear, and then pops away. I knew that Ezra Miller was playing the Flash, but I didn't in that moment instinctively know that was the Flash initially.
I didn't know it was a Flash. Did you when it happened, Nathan?
I did,
Okay. So I didn't know till the end of the movie and people told me.
Yeah.
I thought, this is so dumb. Was that Robin? That was giving? I couldn't figure out who it was.
It was just so befuddling.
Right, it was.
And to do that and have no explanation for it in the movie, that was part of what to me was disarming and hurtful to the overall thrust of the film itself.
Now, for you then, Nathan Bell, I can't even say Nathan B with you guys, but did you know he was the Flash because of Ezra Miller, the actor, or because you could just tell by the...
I could tell by what was going on.
Well, I figured out he's in the Speed Force, and it harkens back to Crisis on Infinite Earths, which is a storyline.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So I did know that. Now, here's the issue, and Nathan, I agree with you. I couldn't understand what he was saying. I had to go and look up what he was saying.
What he was saying, okay.
And now, looking at it in the context of what was going on and the things that he was saying, it makes sense.
So he's traveling, I'm assuming, from the future.
Yes.
Back in time, like on this on the CW series.
Right.
Okay, interesting. Now, I just wasn't – yeah, there were some confusing
– Here's what I'll say about Batman vs. Superman, that to me – between Captain America and Batman vs. Superman, I think they could have pulled it off, but I wanted to see what I saw in Captain America in Batman vs. Superman in terms of the manipulation.
Yeah.
I don't think Lex Luthor did a good job playing the manipulation, playing them against one another to get to the conflict in the fight, where Nathan, the kind of big spoiler that we're not going to give away, at least the villain in that movie was calculating enough to hold his cards and to throw that out there.
And dude, he was super calculating. Yeah. That what happened in that movie was dependent on so many different pieces.
It was.
I mean, a little bit over the top.
Yeah, I mean, that's the Lex Luthor. The guy in Captain America: Civil War is who you wanted Lex Luthor to be.
They give him some real humanity though, too. That
right,
character.
They did.
When he explains his motivations
at the end with the
I was touched by it. Like I mean, not like as a bawling, but I was like, oh, you know what? There was a moment of humanity that kind of put away the fact that, oh, this he would never be able to pull this off.
Right.
You know, you were distracted by that. The other thing, though, about the Batman versus Superman, what about the fact that Batman's supposed to be a detective? I mean, we talk about that calculating Lex Luthor now looks like a buffoonish, maniacal guy. Batman's just an angry – I think somebody online, might have been Kevin Smith, said that Batman, he's basically Bat-Trump. You know, he's white, rich, wealthy, and hates immigrants. And
I'm going to tell the Reverend King you said that, brother. He is not going to like that, but yeah. You know what? I have to say, that is such a great point, and I can't help but wonder, 10 years from now, when people are talking about Civil War, and I don't think this gives anything, but I think this is actually the point, I guarantee you, there'll be some trivia game. Hey, who is the bad guy in Civil War? But that's the brilliance of it.
Mm-hmm.
I loved it, because the brilliance is something had to be set in motion to realistically get the Avengers to fight one another.
Mm-hmm.
Where you're right. I think that's a great point when you contrast that with Luthor's over-the-top, clownish, buffoonish portrayal. It almost distracted from the more subtle setup that would get these two iconic heroes to clash. But I love that because Ben asked me on the way home, said, Dad, now that the bad guy in this, and I said, well, you guys are more up on this comic-wise than I am. I said, I don't know, but I said, Ben, it didn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
And he agreed. I said, because the what he did mattered.
Mm-hmm.
But the persona was almost not that relevant.
Right.
And you were just swept into this Civil War. I felt like, wow, you see them dividing up. And I couldn't help but wonder, the guy I was sitting next to said, the airport scene, he goes, that almost looks like it was conveniently planned for the promotional materials. which I think there is a sense in which perfect shot, poster it, send it out.
Well, it's like, but that's the thing you like about the fact that it ties into comic books. Remember, the comic books always grabbed you by what was on their front cover.
Yes, of course.
They would show you something that maybe didn't even quite happen that way.
Yes.
You're like, there's all the characters rushing each other. That would be the comic book cover.
Yeah.
The promotional materials, like the version of that for the movie world.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. I can I ask this as I know we're about to wrap up.
Yeah,
real quick. Either guy saw. I knew a little about Doctor Strange. Mm-hmm. I assume you guys saw the same preview for the Benedict Cumberbatch version.
We actually didn't have previews on.
Oh,
the
okay.
But we have seen the trailer.
We have seen the trailer.
Seen it. It was. I'm sure it was the same one. You know, because I've seen it a couple of times now. Just my take. I know very little about Doctor Strange. It seems like a totally different universe, and I'm curious how that's going to tie in. And what I mean, I'm sure they're going to make it work, but it's just such a different feel.
Doctor Strange is definitely, as a comic book character, he is on the fringes of the Marvel Universe in terms of what he's about, because we're really talking straight up magic, astral projection, demons. It is unapologetically magic. Like, it. But in the Marvel comic universe, Thor was also magical. Right. The movies have created him. Thor is more of a science fictional character,
right.
You know, and they may do some of that with Doctor Strange, but it worked for Guardians of the Galaxy. It worked for Thor. They were able, every time Marvel is given this challenge, that's when they, I think, do really well, when they have to kind of make a leap and do something. Mm-hmm. The sequels, when they're just kind of treading water, is where I'm less interested. You know, Avengers 1 had to bring all those characters together and make it a movie. Avengers 2 kind of coasted on what the first movie did. So
yeah.
I'm always excited when they set up a challenge like that.
No, I it's a good way to put it. But you told me, Nathan, Doctor Strange almost looks deity-like in the power that he has access to.
Yeah, well, it's going to be interesting the way they pull it off. Back in 2007, 2009, something like that, Marvel started this kind of initiative to be throwing out all of these comic book movies, cartoon movies. And they were kind of fillers because people wanted backstories. People wanted to know more about what was going on in the Marvel universe than what they were getting with, you know, Iron Man. And then 3 years later, Iron Man 2. And then, you know, so they were throwing out all these movies. They're actually pretty decent because they tell a good story, and the origin stories, while not exact, kind of – it's a general origin story for them. So you have – within that series, you have like Planet Hulk, which is a good kind of sub-series of what eventually happens to the Hulk in the comic books. You have Doctor Strange coming out within this, and so – in this particular movie, Doctor Strange is given this ability where he can absorb magic and turn it against the person.
Okay.
That seems to be fairly unique to that comic book character in this particular storyline, not necessarily the Doctor Strange character across the Marvel universe.
Interesting.
So, you know, he's got this kind of unique ability within this magic world, which is kind of convenient.
Yeah. But if you think about Thor is deity, like, obviously, right. too, and he has those powers. I think what happens is everything just goes to a different scale.
Right.
Thor's nemesis and his villains are much, much more powerful than what Tony Stark would fight on a normal regular. Well, actually, not the comics, because Tony Stark always fought Fin Fang Foom, the giant green dragon, but a giant green dragon wouldn't seem out of place in Doctor Strange. So Doctor Strange has a lot more power, perhaps, than Iron Man or definitely Hawkeye, you know, somebody like that. But his villains are also on a much broader, more grand cosmic scale.
Yeah, which is why you just think when Thanos finally shows
up. You need some of these guys in your pocket. Right. It's nice to have Hawkeye, but you're going to need a few Doctor Stranges.
Right.
And where's the Silver Surfer? But
exactly. And you're kind of thinking if it's Hawkeye, even Spider-Man, you know, and Black Widow against Thanos, I'm not feeling really confident.
Well, and spoilers, he wipes out the entire Marvel team almost immediately. Yes. Like in the comics, I remember having that issue and like, it's just a bloodbath.
Right.
I think Cap is the last man standing.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, yep. Dudes.
This was great, guys. Great first cast.
Yeah.
I don't know how we're going to end this thing, though. You know, we got We Rock the Casbah. So,
signature phrase.
Throw the shuriken. I don't know if that even sounds right, but you know, we got some ninja related terminology.
We're going to come up with a killer ending, but for now, we'll leave you all in suspense. So.
I love it.
All right, guys. Great cast. We'll catch you later.
Thanks.
Ladies and gentlemen, you just finished the first ever recording of Pop Culture Ninja. We are so excited to have brought you this. We know it went a little long, but we were just so excited to get everything out there that we had to discuss. Plus, as you know from These Go to 11, Greg and I can discuss movies from ever, and having Nathan on this just, you know, adds to that. So exciting to be able to do this. We did want to mention a few housekeeping things. We are going to be giving away prizes. So if
good
you
stuff,
listen,
we promise.
Yeah, it will be good stuff. If you want to listen up to These Go to 11 coming up this Tuesday, it's going to be Tuesday the 10th. We will have an official giveaway contest. So a lot of that's going to revolve around like iTunes reviews and things like that. Once we clear this through iTunes and get that all up and going. But the iTunes reviews, are really going to help us. These next 2 weeks are going to be, pretty critical for us as a podcast getting up and going. So the more reviews we get, the more likes we get, the more followers we get on Twitter, the more people are listening to it within these first 2 weeks especially, it's really going to throw us on the map and allow people to find us better. Just like with These Go to 11, the reason why we're going to push certain things isn't for fame and glory or anything like that. It's so people can find us and locate us faster.
And also, I think in the 2 weeks, the feedback of what we want is obviously genuine, honest reviews.
Yeah.
And we also want to hear from the audience as we develop this. I think that what we want to do here, maybe more than I've seen done elsewhere, is really develop this kind of community sense where the listener is helping build the podcast.
Yeah.
The sense of what we talk about, what you like, what you don't like, what you would like to see featured on the show, particularly since we are going to be reviewing things, mm-hmm. discussing things, that if there's something you just really want to turn us on to, please let us know. If there's somebody you think we should be talking to or that should be talking to us, let us know. We would love to try to orchestrate that. We're going to be doing things like top tens and mm-hmm. podcasts that are really devoted to something that's kind of conversational, that there's an opportunity for a lot of listener feedback. Our next show is actually going to be kind of a big summer preview where mm-hmm. we're going to discuss what's coming up in the world of movies and books, video games. Yep. Nathan, I think you're even going to bring a little bit of talk about summer beer that yep. we can partake in, and TV shows that are coming over the summer. So in all that, we really want to start a conversation going. You'll be able to go on Letterboxd and Goodreads this week and see the list that we're putting up there for upcoming summer movies
yep.
and upcoming books
yep.
that we'll be releasing over the summer between that May and August period. Also, Nathan, we do have a email, right?
Yes, we do.
Brand new email.
We do. It's popcultureninja@gmail.com. Now, I will say this, because there was a pop culture ninja with the complete spelling already taken, I had to take off the E. So okay. We are pop culture without an E ninja@gmail.com.
I wonder if I have the other email address. I might. We still have the website. So
hopefully if you send it to either one, it'll get to somebody. So
we look forward to hearing your feedback there. You know, in addition to any reviews, please send us what you think about the show and also what you'd like to see us cover. Topics, mm-hmm. individual materials. We're looking forward to really starting a conversation here.
Yeah, it'll be great. So excited. And, we talked about earlier, Nathan, that, you know, I kind of have a closing off saying on These Go to 11, we rock the Casbah. So this would be a great way to get the audience involved. If there is a closing line that you would like me to say at the end of every episode, you can send that to us.
Make it as embarrassing as you want.
That's right. That's right. I'll say it. Hey, I've got no shame, you know. that'll be a great way to get everybody involved. So email us at popcultureninja@gmail.com and send us your suggestions for that, and we'll get that out to you to what I can say for our closing line on Pop Culture Ninja. All right. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Good night.